Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening to the show this week, friends. I do appreciate it. As always, Brian Diaz here with you. Got a really good show coming up for you this week, and we're going to get right to it in just a second. It's another installment of our sustainability series. If you're interested in checking out more about the series and catching some of the other shows that we've done or will continue to do, go visit our website, noladrinks.com, and scroll down just a little bit. You'll see a banner there, and you can click on it, and it'll take you to all the shows that we've done that fall under the umbrella, if you will, of the sustainability series. This week, friends, we are talking about plastic pollution, talking a bit about plastic straws. And I know a lot of you out there are going to go, oh, plastic straws, well, that's such a small part of the plastic problem. You are absolutely correct. But one of the things that I like to say and we talk about during the interview here is it's emblematic of the problem. Maybe it's a gateway. Maybe it gets you to think differently when you look for alternatives to using plastic straws in bars and restaurants and so on and so forth. And it kind of gets to the heart of the single-use plastic stuff that's out there. And that's by and large what we're talking about today. I have three great guests for you. We are going to be chatting with Jane Patton first up, and she is with No Waste NOLA and also No Waste Louisiana. She is an expert in plastic pollution. She joins us in the segment coming up in just a second here. And then we're going to head over to the brand spanking new bar, Domino, operated by our friend of the show here, T. Cole Newton, who also operates 12 Mile Limit. Domino's there on St. Claude, and they are working to reduce their waste footprint at the bar diligently. One of the things they're using are biodegradable straws, and so we talk a little bit about that. We get a cocktail demo, and I want to mention one thing. Luis Cepeda, who is the head bartender, made us a really cool, it's one of their signature drinks called the Bywater Sour. And to clarify, it's he gives the recipe as we do the cocktail demo. You can head over very shortly to our IGTV channel on Instagram. It's just at NOLA Drinks, and you will see the video of the cocktail demo. But two of the ingredients are simple syrup and lemon, and we mentioned in the demo, equal parts, just to be clear, 3/4 of an ounce of each. So it's 1.5 ounces of bourbon, if I remember correctly, 3/4 of an ounce of simple, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice. And shake that up and put it in a rocks glass over some cocktail ice, and then top it with, they use a little bit of Manischewitz there, kind of a little float, makes it nice. So anyway, there you go. That is the drink recipe. But again, head over to our IGTV channel at NOLA Drinks, and you can see the video of said demo very shortly. So we're over there at Domino. We talked to Cole a little bit about the program there. And then we close out the radio portion of the show talking with Emma Rose Cohen, who is the CEO and founder of The Final Straw, which is a really cool alternative product. It's about the size of a little case thing, and it's about the size of maybe a lighter, maybe a little bit wider than that. Fits in your pocket, attaches to your keychain, and it's a collapsible, cleanable, reusable straw. And one thing I'll mention there, if you go to their website, thefinalstraw.com, you can use the discount code NOLADRINKS, and you'll get a discount on a final straw. Take it with you, use it everywhere, make a statement, and use less plastic. That's what we're all about, friends. We're talking about plastic pollution, straws, and all kinds of other things on here on the NOLA Drink Show. Going to take a little bit of a break, and then we're going to bounce over to Two Jags for our first bit of featured interview with Jane Patton. Come on back.
Well, after I'm through,
all right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week, as always. And as you know, another episode of our sustainability series. And this time around, we are talking about plastic, single-use plastic, and plastic straws, which are kind of a poster child, perhaps we can say, if you will, as it relates to the issue. And I'm pleased to welcome my guest, Jane Patton. Jane, how are you?
I'm doing great. A little warm, but doing great. Yeah, how are you, Brian?
I'm doing really well, Jane. Thank you very much for making some time. And I'll give a special shout out here for to our friends here at Two Jags who are allowing us to tape upstairs in their air-conditioned upstairs area. God, it's going to be fall soon, I hope. I hope, Jane.
I hope someday.
I think it's coming, maybe next week or so. Keep our fingers crossed. But we're talking about plastic waste, and that's a lot of your background is working with with plastic waste, plastic pollution. And why don't you tell us, give us a couple minute little bio there about what you do and how you found yourself in the world of addressing plastic waste.
Sure. So I grew up here in Louisiana, which means I have been around both plastic as a waste stream, but also plastic in the way we produce it here. So it's always been present in my life. And as I got older and went to school and started reading about, you know, what are the environmental concerns and where is plastic piling up in the ocean and on the land, and really just started freaking out about all this stuff, and relating it back to living in Louisiana and growing up here and really understanding what the systems that make plastic are and how it stays ever present in our lives and seems increasingly present in our lives. Mm-hmm. And so over the last few years, I've been working with a group called the Break Free from Plastic Movement. An international movement of thousands of organizations that are all taking their little piece of it, the waste incineration or the zero waste or the plastic in the ocean or the extraction of the oil, and just trying to put all of our heads together and see what we can come up with. And about 5 years ago, I founded an organization, co-founded with some friends here in New Orleans, No Waste NOLA, which eventually became No Waste Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And we do zero waste education, organizing, support, information in New Orleans, in Lafayette, and across the state of Louisiana. So great. That's what I do.
Excellent. So what we're talking about here, Gene, and you know this, and you're going to stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks, which is our podcast-only segment. We're going to talk in a little more detail about larger issues connected to plastic waste and what it means. For the sake of this segment, we're talking about you and I were chatting that plastic straws are emblematic, symptomatic, poster child, gateway, whatever term that we want to use, for a much larger issue. And I think you and I were chatting on the phone not too long ago, I will get, and I know you do too, get this occasional pushback where people say, well, plastic straws is a minuscule amount of the overall problem. But I think you and I share the same mentality that it's a talking point. It's an educational point, and it might actually open up a blind spot to people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, I will always tell people plastic straws are not the thing. Right? People are really worried about them. They're scared about them on some level. I mean, I think a lot of folks have seen the video of the turtle, and a lot of folks have heard a lot of talk about plastic straws, that being the really gruesome video with the straw in the turtle's nose. And that's a huge part of what has sparked a lot of people to join this movement against plastic straws. And I totally understand that. And there's a much larger issue around plastic as single use, and also around access and disability, and how do people get liquid if not through a plastic straw? And how do we have a conversation about meeting people's needs and meeting the needs of the entire supply chain of people affected by plastic and by the planet itself and the environment itself? And I think that plastic straws are a great way for us to start that conversation. Right. I mean, in a minute and a half, you and I just described an incredibly nuanced, complicated system around straws, which we wouldn't have had if straws hadn't been such a huge part of the national and international conversation over the last couple of years.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And I think one of the things that's important to note too, one of the things we say, Jane, on the show quite a bit here is that, you know, especially in New Orleans, but this applies really anywhere to all of our listeners who are hearing us, wherever you all are, information is transmitted in bars and restaurants because you're sitting shoulder to shoulder with people. Mm-hmm. And this particular idea that I think by looking to not use or mitigate plastic straw use or creating to use alternatives, it's a conversation starter in a place that is a venue where we have these types of conversations. Mm-hmm. These become, I hate to use this cliche, what is now a cliche term, it's a teaching moment, or could be a teaching moment.
Absolutely. And it's a teaching moment from patron to bartender. It's a teaching moment from bartender to patron. It's a teaching moment from patron to patron.
Precisely.
I mean, I spend a lot of time in bars in New Orleans. We were just talking about this when I came in. I prefer the really quiet bars that have not as many people. And we were having this conversation because 2 jogs on a Saturday afternoon is pretty busy.
In the bar. Yeah. That's why we're upstairs. Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. And so to be able to have these conversations, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times. We were just talking about how I hang out at the Rusty Nail. And originally, I would always go in and say, no straw, please. Can I get a reusable glass for my water? And, you know, really asking them to step up on some of these reuse issues. And now they're doing that all on their own. And that wasn't because of me. That was because of their bartenders. Mm-hmm. They only give out straws on request. They have alternative straws now. I mean, there's a lot of things that bars are doing to actually be able to address this issue, which started with conversations like no straw, which started with one of those bartenders seeing that dang video and really understanding what people are asking for and the small steps that they and we can take to actually do this differently. And then you have a whole conversation about, okay, well, I didn't take a straw, but I took a plastic cup.
Right.
And then you start this chain of conversations around, okay, well, I didn't have a straw, but I had a Go cup. And where does the Go cup go? And what is the implication of this? And I think that that's actually one of the incredible, powerful things about straws being a conversation starter, a teachable moment. And even on this concern about access and disability, which I mentioned, like the depth to which people who work on straws had no understanding of how pivotal plastic straws are to the survivability of some folks in our culture. And the very fact that we were able to have that conversation and to open up our understanding of, you know, moving from bans to straws on request only policy, making sure that requesting a straw is a process you can do with dignity and without judgment.
Right.
I mean, that's actually incredibly important. And think about how much we're learning to like be kinder to each other in that process.
Right.
All
Absolutely.
Because of the
that's
plastic
a great point.
Straw.
Right. That's a great point. And just so we're, I want to make sure that listeners are clear on what we're talking about here, because we are talking about certain folks that have certain disabilities need a straw to be able to drink.
Mm-hmm. And the alternatives for single use are, I mean, there's this great table that floats around Twitter, and I spend a lot of time on plastics Twitter, so which is a fun timeline. But there's this great table that floats around about all the different single use straw options and all the different reusables and why they don't meet all the needs of folks. And that was incredibly educational just for me, because I used to be a very militant, like, I don't understand why people are using plastic. And now I have a much deeper understanding of why people need it. And yet, there's a lot of folks out there who don't. Mm-hmm. I don't. I assume you don't. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of opportunity for us to actually be able to say really easily and really simply, no straw, please.
Right.
And that's just such an easy change to make. And it's such a conversation starter.
And that's you made. I think there's two great points here to tell people if we want to talk about an actionable mm-hmm. item. Is that you can request no straw out of the gate. And sometimes, look, I'll be honest, it's hard to sort of remember because all of a sudden the drink's there in the straw and you're like, damn it, I forgot to actually ask for no straw.
Oh, yeah.
And we know that a lot of times the cocktails that we're talking about, you're not even using the straw anyway.
Right.
So there's no particular reason for it. But that's one thing that you can do out there, friends, is that you can just simply ask for no straw. But from the business side, mm-hmm. then, as you mentioned, straw on request only.
Exactly. And that's a really simple process. And not only that, it actually reduces your bottom line because you don't have right. to buy as many straws.
Right.
And so if you just have them visible, you have them out in the dispenser containers as usual, but you only give folks one if they ask for one. And I think that we've actually seen some bars across the nation say that that reduced their straw uses by 90% by only handing them out on request only. And straws are cheap. They're a tiny part of a bar's bottom line, but they're not zero.
They're not zero.
And
exactly.
being able to do that is great. And then, you know, you don't even have to get into this really complicated conversation about the bioplastics, which is a much larger conversation we can have, but y'all, bioplastics, sure. not a solution. We don't have to talk about compostable straws because we don't have any way to compost them here, and a lot of bars are not separating their waste.
Yeah, right.
And so it's not that we don't have to have this complicated conversation about alternative materials. We just say on request only.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really simple. And a lot of bars across New Orleans are already adopting paper straws
mm-hmm.
and alternative kind of straws. And that is just all on their own independently in addition to the on-request only policy. Mm-hmm. And we've mm-hmm. seen that be incredibly effective.
Yeah, absolutely. It works great. I think, you know, we saw a lot of this model, I believe, coming from times of drought or water rationing in certain places, mm-hmm. where it was the same idea that, you know, you would only get water upon request at a
exactly.
restaurant.
Exactly. And a lot of restaurants that serve free bread only give it to you if you ask for it.
Right.
I mean, that's to prevent waste and also to cut resources in times of resources spent in times of drought or scarcity. And, you know, I don't know how much I can talk about climate change on your podcast.
You can, but we're gonna save that for the podcast only segment because we got about 2 minutes left. But
okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But just to say, you know, there are larger forces at play here that we have to think about in terms of conserving resources and how we use them. And I think the straw is a really simple way to get folks thinking and talking about how to use less and how to produce less waste in their own lives.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And this is exactly what we want people to understand is that, as we said, plastic straws in and of themselves are not the problem. It's a tiny fraction of the problem. It's to actually get you to maybe address what I'll call a blind spot that we all have as we relate to all kinds of social considerations in this world. And this is a way to maybe start to get you to think about not using single-use plastic stuff over and over again. And it is, and you said this, Jane, putting words in your mouth, you can say in so many words, but it's insidious, right? I mean, and I think a lot of people just don't even think about it because it's such a part of our day-to-day lives of having single-use plastic stuff around that they're not necessarily thinking, oh, this is terrible. It's just like it's there, and this is how life has been for the past 40 years.
Right.
And
people in Louisiana feel so overwhelmed by this problem in particular, not only because we have less access to fresh food here in Louisiana than some folks do in California. So it's hard, like in places like California. So it's hard to actually get fresh food that's not packaged in plastic.
Right.
It's hard to, I have a 3-year-old. It's hard to feed my kid without plastic. In fact, it's impossible. Like, I don't want anybody listening to this podcast to think that I don't use plastic in my home.
No,
because
I do.
I
mean, we do. There's, yeah,
you
absolutely
can't get away from it.
There's no way.
Exactly. Yeah. And the system here in Louisiana is so dependent on us to keep using this product. And yet we have so much power here. I mean, we have simple power to do things like ask for no straw, to support the city council in adopting these policies for straws on request, for fees on single-use bags, all sorts of policies that the city council is talking about right now. But we also have an incredible power to look around at our neighbors, to look around at our system and say, how are we contributing to this? And how can I stand up and say, I don't want this here?
Right. And small lifestyle changes, right? One that just pops into mind because you're talking about fresh food and things like that is that when you go to the grocery store, don't buy the cut pineapple or the cut watermelon, in a plastic container. Buy a pineapple or buy a watermelon and take that extra step to cut it yourself. One, it's going to last longer.
Mm-hmm.
But two, you're also reducing a pretty significant amount of plastic waste because those containers are significant in their plastic use.
Huge amount of plastic waste. And the other thing we can think about is, we like to spend a lot of time outdoors here, not just because it's the sportsman's paradise, but also because of Mardi Gras and festivals. And a lot of the time that we spend outdoor, we rely on systems of single use, on prepackaged snacks, on bottled water, on beer, in plastic cups or cans.
Yeah.
And one of the simple things we can also do is recycle, is collect those things for recycling. I mean, we've got great programs in the city that are trying to do that. When you go out to Mardi Gras, like when you go out to Jazz Fest, think in advance of the things you're going to need. Bring refillable, bring reusable, do your best. And I think those simple things and the city really working to support people to do that, to allow for refill. I mean, if Jazz Fest would allow me to bring my water bottle in, that would be great.
Yeah.
All these sort of systems that the city can work together to be able to reduce our waste footprint would be great.
That's a big deal. And we want to encourage businesses then, and we're going to talk to Cole Newton in the next segment, who owns Domino and 12 Mile Limit. They give you 50 cents off a drink when you bring in their, when you bring back a Go cup.
Really? At the bar?
At the bar.
That's so awesome.
Absolutely. And it's great for them because then they're reusing the Go cup. It's saving them money, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're not buying more Go cups.
Right.
And it's a great way to do it. French Quarter Festival, our friends there at the series, when you buy one of the little cooler things and you want the frozen daiquiri, it's cheaper when you come and get a refill.
Yep. And we've also seen like larger scale music festivals like the Bonnaroo Music Festival in Tennessee. I mean, they have the stainless steel pint cup program. And we've actually talked about Jazz Fest or other festivals incorporating something like that. And that would be great. I mean, that's a standard behavior for coffee, like Starbucks and CC's and PJ's and even my local Shake Sugary. They allow you to bring in your reusable coffee mug. They give you a discount. Shake Sugary gives you a 50% discount if you bring in your own.
That's great.
And that's the kind of incentivization that businesses can work with customers to do. And if we can have that for coffee culture, then we can have that for any culture.
For cocktail culture, anything.
Exactly.
Do me a favor, Jinx. We're going to take a little break here on the show. You're sticking around for another Shot with Noah Drinks, which will be a couple segments down the line. Tell people where they can connect online with the campaign.
Absolutely.
Like
they can find us on Facebook at No Waste NOLA and No Waste Louisiana. They can find us online at www.nowastenola.org. And if you want to learn a lot more about what's happening globally, nationally, internationally, you can go to breakfreefromplastic.org, which has loads of resources on single use and zero waste.
Awesome. So you're sticking around, and it'll sound like, well, this is going to happen in 5 minutes for us, but for listeners, it's going to happen in about 20 minutes. We're going to take a little break here, friends, on the Noah Drink Show. We're going to be over at Domino talking to T. Cole Newton, and then we're going to chat with Emma Rose Cohen from The Final Straw, a great alternative for you to put in your pocket and bring to bars instead of using a straw. Take a little break here on the Noah Drink Show, friends. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show this week, friends, as always. And yes, as promised, we are here on St. Claude at Domino with a proprietor T. Cole Newton, a new spot here in town, and a special celebrity walk-on by Baby Felix, who will one day inherit the Domino, I think is the plan.
If it's still around when he's ready for it, he is welcome to it. Although, no pressure, you don't have to continue in the family business if that's not what you want in your life.
Fair enough. And then, you know, he's just sucking it in right now. He's 9 months old, so he's in that phase that he actually heard you. Mm-hmm. It's being filed away there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's in the hopper.
Right on. So one of the things that we're here at Domino, it's a cool new spot that opened up. We'll talk a little bit more about that after we do a cocktail demo. But we're talking about straws and plastic waste, friends, as you know, here on the show. And Cole has two places, 12 Mile Limit, as well as this new place, Domino. And you guys moved to compostable straws, and you're striving to reduce bar waste as much as possible.
Yeah, we're trying to convert as much of our waste from traditional landfill destination, that sort of cradle-to-grave model of consumption, and towards a cradle-to-cradle model of consumption. Mm-hmm. So getting away from the idea that something will be used once and then thrown away, never to be seen again, and trying to get to a place where there's an idea of what everything is going to be once its initial single use has been sort of used up.
Yeah, yeah. One and done, as they say, yeah, right?
So bioplastic straws are a big part of that, but also recycling as much as we can and just trying to figure out ways that we can improve our sustainability generally.
Cool. Well, and that's it, because we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to bounce over to Luis Zepeda, and Luis is the head bartender here at Domino, and he's going to demonstrate how to make a special one of the house cocktails here, and he's going to garnish it with a compostable straw. So that's what we're going to do. Hang on 1 second.
All right, everybody, we're here with head bartender at Domino, Luis Zepeda, and Luis is going to demonstrate a drink for us, and we're going to cap it off with a really important bit of garnish. What are we trying out today, Luis?
So here we have our Bywater Sour. It's one of our house cocktails. It's one of our house cocktails, probably the most popular as well. It's a riff on a New York sour with a little bit of our own personal touch. So we start off with an ounce and a half of bourbon.
Nice. It's a good way to start.
And we do equal parts simple syrup and lemon juice.
Okay.
Which is basically the essentially a whiskey sour.
Right. Okay.
That's how traditional whiskey sour starts off. Ice.
So that's pretty much what makes it a sour, right, Luis? Is the lemon juice and the simple?
Yes. Yeah. Traditionally, okay. Anything that's got lemon simple in it is a sour.
Shake it up. Up and strain it. Alright. So rocks glass and a few pebbles in there.
Yep, got a few ice cubes. There's some nice cubed ice, really great cocktail ice. And this is a blackberry wine float. So we actually use manischewitz.
Okay.
Real traditional.
When I think Bywater, I think manischewitz.
And it also has a little bit of added sweetness as well.
Cool.
And so the last thing we put into it, which you aptly named our garnish, it's a couple of straws, but these are actually made of a corn-based plastic, so they're biodegradable, compostable, and that's a big part of our effort here is to reduce our carbon footprint. So if we have to use straws, we'll pay a little bit extra and get biodegradable, compostable straws so that we're not hurting the environment by
extra life.
Giving people a little something easier to drink their drink with.
Beautiful, man. You mind if I taste it?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's delicious. Cheers, Luis. Thanks.
Cheers. You're very welcome.
Going to be right back with Cole.
All right, thanks to Luis for making a very delicious drink for us here, and we are back with Cole and Felix. And one day, if anything, Cole, I assume that Felix can step into the role of manager of sustainability.
Sure.
And then
he's the one who's really going to be living with the consequences of all of these decisions that we are collectively making as a society.
Exactly.
So it is incumbent upon him to really take the reins.
Yeah.
As soon as he can.
Yeah, exactly.
Be Greta Thunberg of 15 years from now.
There you go. Well, so, Cole, you were talking a little bit about some of the importance of reducing waste. And why is it important to you? I mean, obviously, beyond the environmental considerations and things like that, there's an ethical consideration to running the business. And it can be challenging, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's tricky because you really want to be able to maintain an affordable price point as well. I think that is also, in an environment like the Bywater, where there's a very mixed demographic, the neighborhood's gentrifying rapidly, but there are people here who represent a number of different socioeconomic strata, and being accessible to those people from a price point is very important to me as well. I think that's a concern that we have to balance ethically. And when we do some of the changes that you do to reduce our environmental impact or negative environmental impact, you run the risk of doing something that forces you to increase your price point to a degree that would alienate some of the people that you're trying to attract from the neighborhood.
Right.
Be a broad space where a number of different types of people can find a home. But fortunately, a lot of the decisions that we make about sustainability ultimately increase the bottom line. That anything you're doing to run more efficiently will help your dollars. And so things like driving a lot of our waste to compost, because we share our dumpsters with our neighbor over at Red's, and we don't have to have our own trash service because we're able to drive so much of our waste towards recycling and towards compost. And so we're saving money there at the same time as we're spending a little bit more money on compostable bioplastic straws, for example.
Okay.
So it's always a balance.
Now, always a balance. And is that always part of your conversation with the team and things like that when you plan? Is we talk about, okay, here's what we're trying to accomplish with the cocktails, here's what we're trying to accomplish with the ambience. Maybe you're thinking about putting a new drink on the menu or doing something behind the bar. Do you say, now, how is this going to affect the sustainability situation?
I think it inevitably is a concern. I don't make it explicit.
Okay.
I think one of the, you also don't want to, I feel like being too overtly environmentally conscious, it can run the risk of coming across as preachy.
Sure.
So we aren't particularly outward facing about a lot of these sustainability initiatives because we don't want to become sort of that niche product for people who have these concerns. We have these concerns, and regardless of whether or not you share those concerns, please come and have a drink here. We don't want to be all in your face about it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we also need people to know about these things because to a degree that people vote with their dollars, and a lot of people would prefer to visit businesses that share their values.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fine line between not wanting to be all in your face. Like, the theme of the bar is not sustainability.
Sure.
It is a mission of the bar, and not wanting to hit people over the head with that. But at the same time, I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm having this conversation. We want to get the word out about it, too.
Right. So let me ask you this question real quick, because I've got about 2 minutes, and I want you to get information in about the bar. Mm-hmm. With the compostable straw, do you find that it is an opportunity to engage people to talk about the issue a little bit?
Occasionally, yes. I mean, in part because they're slightly more expensive, and in part because straws are ultimately largely unnecessary to mm-hmm. the consumption of most beverages. Some of our frozen beverages, I think, really depend on a straw for their for serious enjoyment. But it's an opportunity to say, hey, if you would like a straw, we are happy to provide one, because more and more people are opting out. But knowing that our straws are not going to have the same environmental impact as a traditional one-time-use plastic straw or non-bioplastic straw, I think people like – that's a good way to engage and let people know about the kinds of things that we're doing, and in a way that they might want a straw. A lot of people still prefer them, but that they can have one and be a slightly more guilt-free about it.
Right. Got
it. And then, yeah, those conversations – can drive a lot of people.
And further conversation, which
is part
of the theme
exactly.
of today. We got about a minute left, Cole, before we got to close out this portion of the show. Tell people where they can find Domino, ours, Facebook, all that good stuff.
We are on St. Claude Avenue in the Bywater, immediately next door to Red's Chinese, across the street from the Saturn Bar, in a block that's really coming up quick. We are at 3044 St. Claude Avenue. You can find us open 7 days a week, starting at 3 p.m., ending at 2 a.m., so 11 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have happy hours from 3 to 6 p.m. every day, and a different service industry-focused happy hour from 12 a.m. to 2 a.m. every day. And we do pop-ups on the weekends. We do trivia on Tuesdays. There's really not a bad time to come check us out.
Come play board games.
We've got an excellent rotation of tabletop games. That you can enjoy. Bring outside food, too. We do pop up sometimes. You have a kind of a limited menu of sort of elevated after-school special-type food here.
Right.
But if you want to order from Red's or Pizza Delicious or Junction or any of our delicious neighbors and bring the food over here, you're more than welcome to do
so. Awesome. Cole, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me,
Brian. Felix, thank you.
We
look forward to you taking over the bar soon. All right, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. Come on back.
New Orleans, the
then you can understand just what I mean.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show. As you know, we're talking about plastic straws and plastic issue in general, pollution on a much larger level. But as you know, we've talked about this in the show already, that straws are sort of emblematic of the situation in many ways. And I'm pleased to bring in our next guest, Emma Rose Cohen, who is the CEO and founder of Final Straw, which is a really unique and interesting product. And I'll let Emma tell us about it. But Emma, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So Emma, tell us a little bit about Final Straw and tell us about what it is and how you started.
Sure. So Final Straw is the world's first reusable, collapsible straw that fits right in your keychain. It started because there was just nothing out there. I went on a voracious Amazon search to find a portable, collapsible straw, and it didn't exist. And this was just when Seattle was banning straws. And so basically saw the opportunity wanted to make something cool and different that empowered consumers to reduce their single-use plastic waste, and launched Final Straw on Kickstarter in 2018 and raised almost $2 million. So it was pretty,
wow,
pretty crazy. We certainly were not expecting that kind of reaction, but I think it just goes to show that people really are looking for solutions and that, you know, industry needs to keep innovating in order to provide the tools that people need to reduce their plastic waste.
Yeah, great. Okay, and it's really cool. And I mentioned to you before we went on the air here that that's where I first saw y'all, was on Kickstarter. And it's a really neat little, it's a collapsible straw, as you said, and it's portable, and it kind of folds up, and it fits in this little case that looks like it's about the size of a lighter or so, right? And you can connect it to your keychain and just keep it in your pocket or your purse.
Yeah, exactly. And it comes with a telescoping cleaning brush, too, because everyone's favorite question is, how do you clean that thing? We're really trying to make this convenient and make it a better alternative to single-use plastic, because that's why, as a society, we've become so addicted to plastic, is convenience. So if we can kind of reframe it and then make items that actually feel better too, like when you use our straw, it's like, you know, got this like really nice ergonomic mouthpiece and it has a really good feel to it. So we really want to enhance the experience and make reusables the norm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's why, and as I mentioned to you before, and we were kind of teeing this up at the top of the show, is that we wanted to provide people with an opportunity to think about, here's a cool solution, and it's a really neat product that you can actually, as we mentioned, take with you. Easy to clean. I was kind of reading some of the cleaning instruction stuff that you have, Emma, and, you know, like you mentioned that there's the brush that comes with it that you can kind of clean it out. And but say you go to a bar, right, and you can just take it into the restroom or something, give it a quick rinse and a brush out, and then you can give it a deeper cleaning when you get home. When you need to, right?
Exactly. I just sip a little bit of water through it when I'm out and about, just to kind of clear out whatever I was drinking. Mm-hmm. And then when I go home, I'll do the bigger wash. But, you know, what's so fun about Final Straw is when you do pull it out of the bar, it makes quite a statement. You know, it snaps together like magic, and you're going to get in a conversation. You're going to get people talking about straws, plastic waste, and solutions. And that's really the point of why we're doing it. We're not trying to just, you know, solve the straw problem, because it is minute, and we are discussing that, you know, it's just the solving the straw problem will not have any impact on solving the larger waste problem, unless it is what is kind of the foot in the door towards getting people to think differently about waste. And that's what we've experienced, is that people, they start small and they start thinking differently, because first of all, there's just a lack of awareness around single-use plastics. Like, you know, remember the days when you used like a single-use plastic bag all the time and didn't think about it. Now we're becoming more aware. We're realizing that, you know, that the impact that we're having on our earth are not sustainable. And once you become aware, and it really shifts the way you think about everything you use. So we right. hope that Final Straw is kind of the first step that people take towards their awareness journey and towards living more sustainable lives.
That's great. And thank you for making that point, because we've touched on it during the episode, and you and I were talking about this also before we went on the air, that, you know, it very much exactly as you said, I like to call it a gateway. It's a conversation starter. And one of the reasons, you know, that we're talking about this here, and we're talking about as it relates also to bars and restaurants and these things, is bars and restaurants are places where information is transmitted in many ways. And it's an important social part of our social fabric. And this, to me, is such a great fit, because as you said, you pull out Final Straw, it's a conversation starter with maybe the bartender or the restaurant owner or the person sitting next to you at the bar. And then there's this, and when you go into a bar where people are using biodegradable straws, or they're not, you know, they're only giving you a straw if they ask for one, or paper straws or whatever, it's also another opportunity, as you said, to get started with the thinking and then move you down the road further. And I think that's a really important point.
Exactly. And it's like, it's also like a rudder, you know, we're making this, it's a rudder in comparison to the size of the ship is minuscule, but if you just move it a little bit, you can completely change the trajectory of, you know, a massive boat. So we're really, you know, working towards raising the awareness, because once you become aware, you can't become unaware. And then it just starts to irk at you. And then every day, you think differently about the waste that you're creating. I mean, I look back on, you know, in college when I used to just use single-use plastic cups, and like, you know, like it didn't even matter. And now it's like, I can't touch anything without thinking about where it'll end up.
Exactly. Right. That's a great point. I want to ask you this, because we got about 3 minutes or so left, Emma, before I have to close out the radio portion of the show and this portion of the interview. You guys have a really great marketing campaign connected to Final Straw as well. I love the hashtag Suck Responsibly, but it's such a friendly approach. What kind of spurred that?
Yeah. So when I was in college, my girlfriends and I used to dress up like mermaids and do beach cleanup, and we just, you know, we had the outfits. Why not? It eventually grew into founding a nonprofit called Save the Mermaids, where we dress up like mermaids, do beach cleanup. And it's just like, it reframes the way for me that things could be done. I realized that, you know, you can transmit a message in a fun, sparkly, exciting way, and people are way more inclined to listen than if it's just like the finger wagging and kind of like, look how bad it's gotten. Because the point of what we're doing is to inspire people to make a change. If you just go out and you read all the headlines around plastic waste, you're going to feel really small and helpless. And what we are doing as a brand is saying, no, no, no. Like, you have the power, you have the voice, and here's an opportunity to connect with other people that are going down this road, so we can all work together to change the world.
That's great. I appreciate that point, because I think when we talk about it, and you know this very well, and it's an old idea with the way environmental nonprofits and nonprofits in general work, is when the message is doom and gloom, you turn people off. And that's why I wanted to ask you that question. Yeah, exactly. And you feel like, just as you said, you're helpless and people just tune it out. And that's why I wanted to ask you about the marketing campaign, because it's really cute and it's really positive and it's funny. And I think it creates a very friendly way for people to find the product, use the product, and really connect with the product on a personal level.
Well, I'm a weirdo, so if you're not like, all my friends and I, which is silly, and it's so much more fun, and it's just like, why can't we change the world and have fun doing it versus like being sad and depressed? And of course, like, there are the low points, but we really want to inspire people through light and humor and happiness and love.
That's great. Do me a favor, Emma. We got about 45 seconds left. Will you tell people where they can find you online, buy a Final Straw, find you on social media?
Yeah, I mean, if you're into mermaids or sucking responsibly, please check us out at finalstraw.com or Instagram at finalstraw, and on Facebook at Suck Responsibly. We share a ton of news and exciting updates around plastic pollution and tips on how to reduce your waste.
And you can order from the website, right, and get one sent to you.
And you can order from finalstraw.com.
Okay, perfect. So finalstraw.com, friends, and check out the hashtag Suck Responsibly. You will find them that way. Emma, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And I look forward to seeing Final Straws in bars everywhere. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. Friends, if you're listening on the radio, get the podcast, because we're going to carry on the conversation with Jane Patton. And if you're listening on the radio, I'm going to sign off right now. So remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all.
Red roses too, I see them bloom for me and you.
Everybody, hey, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the show. Hope you find the conversation that we're having interesting. Kind of fun to mix up the guests here a little bit and come at it from some different angles. We're going to bounce back over to Two Jags here in just a second to continue our conversation with Jane Patton, and then I will be back with my parting shot. Here we go. Yep, another shot with Nola Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends, this week. And we are back with Jane Patton. Once again, a special shout out to our friends at Two Jags here on Decatur, 800 block. I forget the exact address. Second oldest restaurant in New Orleans. Come check them out. They're always gracious to us and allow us to tape the show here. And Jane, we're talking, when you were on in the first segment with us, or second segment overall on the show, we were talking about plastic straws, and plastic straws as sort of being emblematic of the plastic issue and the broader single-use plastic issue, and how it relates to our lifestyle, how it relates to how we connect with these issues. And I'm actually going to throw it out to you this way. And you know this, I mentioned this to you when I did Coral Reef work for 10 years, and there was a particular point in time when I was in a place called Raja Ampat, which is the far eastern portion of Indonesia, mm-hmm. in the middle. Okay, you know, are you familiar?
Yeah.
And I knew this academically, okay, when I was out there, but this is some of the most remote area of coral reef that you could actually be at on the whole face of the earth. Mm-hmm. And we're out in on the water, and there are rafts of plastic floating everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Flip-flops, plastic bags, all kinds of
laundry
stuff.
Baskets.
Laundry, yeah, yep. Not so much laundry baskets in that part of the world, but
okay.
Plastic bags.
Yeah.
And it was insidious in Papua New Guinea and in Indonesia, in that part of the world, the ubiquity of plastic bags, which I think is, you know, and again, this is not our only consideration with plastic waste, but it's another consideration strongly, because we talk about very much a single use. It's very petrochemical mm-hmm. intensive to make plastic bags, and they are so quickly discarded. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to bring this up because something that you wanted to talk about, when we talk about the developing world, we think about waste being dumped on the developing world. Mm-hmm. We also think about, in my view, like how in New Guinea and in Indonesia, how things worked, where we had a lot of really poorly made Chinese products that were all made of plastic, and plastic bags are coming from China. And, you know, and they're everywhere. Plastic bags are everywhere on this planet, in anywhere you ever go. And there's a racial component to this. There's a developing world component to this, but there's a racial component to this. And we're not just talking about New Orleans, but New Orleans serves as a really good example. There's a racial component to this in New Orleans as well.
Yep. I think actually I want to talk about the home, the racial and racist component of this at home. And then let's talk about what's happening in the wider ecosystem of the world. So I recently met a researcher at LSU who actually goes down to the barrier islands of Louisiana on the Gulf.
Okay.
And he finds similar stuff to what you're just talking about. I mean, he sends me pictures of visible Gatorade bottles and visible flip-flops and these ubiquitous plastics and brands and things that we buy and use in our own lives that we never think about. And this is not in Papua New Guinea. This is not in Indonesia. This is in our backyard. This is at home.
Right.
These are plastics that came from people in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. These are plastics that maybe came from people in Mississippi and got carried by the Gulf currents into Louisiana.
Right.
I mean, these are plastics that we are used to seeing. And we're finding these all over the world. And as we talk about what are the racist and racism issues here in Louisiana, the way that that plays out is actually twofold. It plays out in the access people have to clean water, in the access people have to fresh food. We were talking earlier in the break about the fact that grocery stores like Save-A-Lot, which serve predominantly Black, predominantly low-income populations in Louisiana, not only do they package a lot of their fruits and vegetables in plastic, which Rouse's does too, to be fair, but not quite that level. They also already charge 5 cents for a bag. If you go to Save-A-Lot and you buy your groceries there, they charge you 5 cents for every plastic bag. But if I go to Rouse's,
we need to unpack that a little bit, what that means. But yeah, but go on. What are you going to say about
that? Yeah, so if I go to Rouse's or Robert's, they don't charge me for a plastic bag. Mm-hmm. They don't charge me at all for any of that. Mm-hmm. It's much easier for me to get unpackaged fruits and vegetables at Rouse's and Robert's than it is for me to get them at Save-A-Lot. And the fact that that is already playing out in a really systemic racist way in New Orleans. And the reason why that's important, it's not just the cost, the monetary cost at the moment to the consumer. It's the fact that we know that plastic packaging has a negative health impact on the food that it's wrapped around. We know that plastic leaches into things like fresh vegetables, right, that it leaches into water, that it leaches into milk. And every time we buy a drink or buy a sandwich or buy a head of broccoli wrapped in plastic, we are going to be consuming the toxins that came out of that plastic in that food. And if it's easier for me as a middle-class white person to get a plastic-free head of broccoli at Robert's than it is for somebody who is a working-class Black person to get an unwrapped head of broccoli at Save-A-Lot, that is a fucking problem.
Yeah.
And that is racism at play.
Right.
And I don't mean to say that in a way that's like, oh, well, the system is racist. Guess there's nothing we can do with throwing my hands up. What I mean to say is if we keep talking about these inequities and we keep talking about the way that plastic represents racism, that is actually important to us solving the problem and how we fix it.
Right.
And the other way that that plays out in Louisiana that we also have to talk about is we make plastic here. We make it in the chemical corridor between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. And I say chemical corridor, but you and I both know there's another name for that stretch of land. Do you know what it is?
Don't tell me. I mean,
Cancer Alley.
Oh, Cancer Alley.
Is what they call
it. Okay,
gotcha.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And that stretch of land between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, where all the chemical companies are, they are in predominantly Black neighborhoods.
Right.
They're not just in the river parishes. They're in the predominantly Black wards of the river parishes.
Right, right.
And
right.
So we actually really have to look at the complicity that people in Baton Rouge and New Orleans have in this system that is inequitable in the way we buy our groceries, but also in this global system that is harming local Black people whom we know and love and care about, or at least purport to care about. And yet we are comfortable with this global system of plastic production harming our friends and neighbors and relatives. And that's actually something that we've got to unpack as well, is what is the power that we have in Baton Rouge, in New Orleans, as people all over the river parishes to be able to stand up and say, we're not going to do this anymore. To actually see solidarity and affinity with our neighbors, with our friends, with our relatives in the river parishes and even in Baton Rouge and New Orleans to say, you know what? We're all busting our asses to be able to buy groceries for our kids. We all want the best for our kids. We all want to make sure that we're safe, that our kids are healthy. How do we do that together? And how do we do that in a way that doesn't require plastic, that actually makes sure that everybody's healthy, that everybody has access to the same stuff? I mean, that's really what we're pushing for.
And that's really well said, and that's a great point. And I think we're talking about Louisiana here, specifically the example that you bring up of this dynamic, this set of circumstances plays out globally.
Totally. And a lot of times we've actually heard, I mean, I'm sure a lot of listeners of your show have heard the story about how there's 5 countries in Southeast Asia that are dumping most of the plastic into the ocean, right? And I say that with like a huge caveat, because there is a study that technically said that here's a list of countries ranked in order as the ones that emit the most plastic into the ocean. What that study didn't end up unpacking is how much of our garbage is actually shipped overseas away. Into these countries.
Right.
And not they're not shipping our garbage, y'all. They're shipping our recycling.
Yeah.
The stuff that we marked as being recycled is what's going into China and Vietnam and Malaysia and Thailand. And those are four of the top five countries that are emitting most plastic into the ocean. The other thing that they don't unpack in that study, and this is something that everybody in New Orleans can relate to, is that there are actually a relatively small number of multinational corporations that are responsible for that plastic. Not just because they make it, but because they're the ones that stamp their names on it and put it in the hands of customers, and then there's no way to manage it.
And then also, right, too, if I'm not mistaken, then you have a situation where certain companies are also profiting on negotiating with who is going to accept said waste and put it in their landfills.
So we've got companies that have, shall we say, ulterior motives around how they move. How they
I don't even know if they're ulterior.
They're just motives that maybe are not that public. You know, it's money, y'all. It's money. And they're the ones who are moving waste from the global north into the global south.
Right.
And that's always my terminology for like developed versus developing. I always just say global north versus global south, just for your listeners. But, you know, there was a recent story on NPR about why we recycle. And if you actually go back to why the United States recycles, going back to the 1970s, we recycle because of forces at play in organized crime. I mean, that's a large part of the origin of the recycling system in the United States, is because of people looking to make a buck off of the city's garbage.
Off of waste management.
Exactly. It's not super regulated. It's not a job people want to do. And, you know, there's the local waste management company. And I think, like, they have this slogan that makes me laugh. It says, "Business stinks, but it's picking up."
Yeah.
I don't remember which one of them it is. And that, I mean, I think that's the whole like waste management system, is that it is business. It is not an altruistic. It is something that people are making money off of.
Absolutely.
And the global north has been making money off the global south for a long time.
And this goes from cradle to grave, right? I mean, I think people need to understand that once it leaves your hand, there is still money that gets made.
So much money.
And exactly. And then the profit motive that creates pollution creates racial inequity, as we've talked about here.
Totally.
Contamination on all kinds of levels. On a global level, this stuff is persistent. It doesn't go away. It finds itself. So like you were talking about in the Barrier Islands in Louisiana, finding, you know, Gatorade bottles or things like that that came from somewhere in the Gulf
In the
South.
Near vicinity.
Right,
exactly.
We know that. But then this stuff is also very, very persistent, where I can tell you the example I was giving you at the top of the segment, where the population where I'm talking about, where we were doing work in Raja Ampat, is not significant enough to produce the amount of waste. So it is persisting from, it's a regional thing.
Oh, totally. And not only that, these are regions and systems that until very recently, I mean, in the last 10, 15 years, since I was a legal adult, these countries have actually had systems that were based on refill and reuse. So the plastic onslaught, the single-use onslaught, is very new to these countries.
Very, very new.
And on no level has there been an investment in the amount of waste collection or waste management parallel to the amount of plastic that has been shipped into these countries.
Yeah, absolutely.
For instance, like one of the largest sort of producers of plastic worldwide is Coca-Cola. I say producers with air quotes, which you can't see on the radio. Because they don't actually make plastic, but they
use
it. In fact, they're a consumer. The largest consumer of plastic worldwide is Coca-Cola. Right. They do 3 million tons a year. Coca-Cola is also one of the world's most recognizable brands. The Coca-Cola logo is more recognizable than the cross, than the Christian cross.
Yep.
And
you can be at any roadside stand on any highway anywhere in the world and see the Coca-Cola brand.
And Coca-Cola, until extremely recently, sold their product in glass bottles.
Yep.
Not in glass bottles in most places in the global south.
Yep.
Not glass bottles that were going to be recycled. Glass bottles that were collected for refill, for cleaning and refill.
Yep.
So we're not talking about industrial sandblasting, recycling of glass. We're talking literally the Coca-Cola, the street vendors would sell you the Coke in the bottle. They were not selling you the bottle, and you had to give the bottle back.
Yep.
And that was the system that was really prominent in these countries until 10 or 15 years ago.
Yep.
And it's only relatively recently that that Coca-Cola has been, one, intending for the bottles to be single use, to be one way, and two, been making them into plastic instead of glass.
Right.
And when you actually see these countries that used to be reliant on these systems of refill and reuse very suddenly now are taking everything in one-way, single-use, and without the investment in waste management. Coca-Cola won't even, for instance, tell Indonesia or Bali or any of the other islands around Indonesia, okay, guys, we're about to send you X number of plastic bottles, so you need to have a waste management system that accommodates that. Mm-hmm. No, they won't say that because it's bad for business.
Right.
It's a disclosure that could
hurt business.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And there's not enough – there's no economic incentivization to actually do anything about it, right? I think this is where – it's kind of interesting because I think when you talk about reusing glass bottles mm-hmm. and – One of my favorite places in the world, this will be a very trite example, but one of my very favorite places in the world when I lived in Honduras for a while, and it was the Deposito is what it's called in Spanish.
Okay.
And the Deposito is where you would go and you would go in the morning and you would go pay X number of dollars for your case of Coke mm-hmm. and your bottle of rum. And then when you would come home from work at the end of the day, your case of Coke and your bottle of rum was sitting on your front porch. Mm-hmm. And then you were essentially required, if you will. I mean, you were not required if you didn't do it, but you got money back, a mm-hmm. considerable amount of mm-hmm. money back. And then on your way into work, you would drop off your empty case of Coke and your bottle of rum because it would be refilled, exactly as you said. And that model is constant kind of everywhere. I don't think it's necessarily an economic incentivization thing. I'm thinking out loud here. The alternatives are not even being provided. People are not even being given the information
right.
that you can actually go about it this way. Governments and municipalities, right?
No,
and
absolutely.
And then the consumerism behind it has changed a whole ton of this.
Totally.
And the companies, suppliers, producers are the ones that are not even – they're not telling you that this is how this can happen.
No, I think it's actually a system failure that they're not telling you that this can happen. It's the producers, the consumer goods companies, but it's also the local retailers. Sometimes the retailers don't know, and sometimes they don't want to have to go through the process of, for instance, creating infrastructure that allows you to buy in bulk
right.
any of these things.
Exactly.
And one of the things that we actually see happen, and this is another way that this actually ends up being an inequitable and unjust. It's not always race-based. A lot of times it's income and class-based.
Sure. And then they're often one and the same. Of
right.
course.
No, but. Totally. And especially in the U.S. South, or really across the U.S. But the way we see this happen is, you know, I want to go to the store and I want to buy peanut butter in a glass jar because I know it's healthier for my kid, or I want to buy it in a reusable container. That peanut butter is like three times the price of a peanut butter in a plastic container.
Right, right.
And the fact that that's not a real choice.
Right.
Because if we tell the consumer, oh, you just need to make better choices, that's not a real choice.
Right.
Just send a family to the grocery store and to see that buying stuff without plastic, sometimes grocery stores actually have broccoli that's wrapped in plastic and broccoli that's not, and the broccoli that's not is more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And when you actually like go to these stores and you see the practical application of this, and then we say, oh, this is about consumer choice. This is not about consumer choice. It's also not about choice when it's significantly harder for me to feed my child because every piece of food I buy, not in plastic, has to be cooked by me at home. Like, that is also a luxury that I am barely able to afford, and some days I'm not able to afford. And yet we are asking working moms and dads to do that across this city and across every other place in the U.S. We are asking folks to take time, which is incredibly valuable, and to take their hard-earned money to invest it in a system that is not single-use without giving them real choices and real options. And that, I think, is actually part of the like systemic racism that is present and the systemic inequity that is present. And that's why I think it's important that we keep having these conversations about mm-hmm. how straws are like not the thing. Straws are the thing that allow you to open up a conversation
right.
about this.
Right.
Yes, it's great that people don't use straws. And there are so many things that a working class mom has to worry about, or a working class dad, shout out to the dads out there, have to worry about when it comes to being able to feed your kids, when it comes to be able to protect your own health.
Work two jobs, protect your own health. And it's actually pretty flippant for me to say, as I did earlier, to say, okay, well, you know, don't buy cut pineapple in the grocery store, buy a pineapple.
I don't think that's flippant at all. I think it's perfectly reasonable to suggest that to people, but just knowing what we're suggesting, understanding that is an investment of time and a different kind of structure.
Sure. Yeah. And a different kind of structure. And that's important.
Yeah. But like, it would be great if Whole Foods would like pre-peel my oranges or cut up my pineapple and sell them, allow me to take it home in a reusable container or sell it to me in a reusable container that I can then bring back in the model of Fiora Deposito. Mm-hmm. And I'm even thinking about that word deposito, right? It's I don't deposit. Know what its root, right? Deposit. Yeah. I don't know exactly what its root is, but it's very similar to that word. And we used to buy things on deposit.
Yeah. And that is the root of that word. And that's what those businesses were called. They were called, I mean, where you would go and Latin America, when I lived there in Central America, is you went to the deposito, and this mm-hmm. is where you bought your Coke and your rum and all that kind of stuff. Because the origin of the term is exactly as it is. You're giving a deposit and you're putting a deposit down to be filled with a product that is only – there's an understanding. I mean, it's not a perfect solution, but there's an understanding of the idea that from the product itself has cost, mm-hmm. not just – the liquid in the bottle, the bottle itself has cost. So you're
value.
So you're paying for that.
Exactly. And I think if retailers and grocery stores and consumer goods companies were actually really focusing on the fact that they don't sell plastic, they sell Coke.
Right.
They sell vegetables.
Yep.
They sell food. They sell the things that people need to be able to keep themselves healthy and happy. That's what they sell. Plastic ain't one of those things, y'all. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need plastic to be healthy and happy. We can have a whole other conversation about plastics and medical care, which is not what we're talking about right now.
Sure.
We're talking about plastics. Look,
there's
and
a
packaging.
Role for plastics in the world.
Totally.
We don't need to do this is not what we're talking about.
Yeah. I think the other thing that we need to figure out is the fact that we are right now in Louisiana making choices which are actually saying that it is okay for us to make some non-zero percentage of our neighbors and relatives and friends sick so that we can have pre-cut pineapple in a plastic container. And that's not to put an onus of guilt on a consumer at all. That is to elevate the fact that there are large, large corporations, some of which are based in the U.S. and some of which are not, that are making an awful lot of money off of us
consuming
really,
the way that we consume.
And really fighting for it.
Yeah.
Not just consuming the way that we're consuming, but really like feeling strongly about being able to buy our pre-cut pineapple and being able to have our plastic straws.
So you mean on the consumer side, or you mean that companies are advocating us to manipulating us to think that way?
Companies manipulate us, Brian?
Oh, come on.
That's exactly what
I'm
saying.
I'm slow on the uptake, but yes, okay. I just want to make sure that we're clear on that level too.
I'm saying that these companies are manipulating us through marketing, through their sales, through their customer and consumer loyalty to actually be not just wanting plastic, but like vehemently wanting it, and to tell stories about people who don't like plastic or want to get rid of it as being crazy.
So let me ask you this then, Jay, because I think this is a really interesting point when we talk about this idea of simply charging for plastic mm-hmm. bags. Okay, we've touched on what some of the implications are for this with Save a Lot and other things. It has been effectively sold then, I think, and this is an interesting perspective that you stated. You make people angry because then you're saying if you're charging for plastic bags, we're taking away from your freedom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We actually recently had a
Jinx buy me a Coke because we didn't talk about this during the break.
No, we didn't. a few years ago, we actually had a Louisiana state legislature who tried to pass a bill at the state level to take away our ability to ban plastic bags in New Orleans. That state legislator was from St. Tammany. I'm looking at y'all because I think you live in St. Tammany.
Sure.
But he was not a New Orleans representative. But he heard about the plastic bag ban in New Orleans and got so offended, which is to say the American Chemistry Council called him up and said, Paul, you need to be offended by this. Mm-hmm. And so he went to the state legislature and tried to pass a law that said we couldn't ban plastic bags anywhere in Louisiana, not just in New Orleans. And we had to fight that tooth and nail. Now, thankfully, our legislature is full of some very smart and responsible and respectful people, and that's all I'll say about them. And a whole lot that aren't. But this particular committee was made up of people who really heard and understood our arguments about the fact that this is not an environmental issue, at least not purely. This is actually an issue of local waste management. of local budgets and local control over local budgets. Because if the city of New Orleans is saying that collecting and dealing with plastic bags is costing us tens of thousands of dollars a year, which it is, because they have to be collected as litter, because they gum up the works at recycling facilities, mm-hmm. they actually cost cities tens of thousands of dollars a year. And do you know where city revenue comes from?
Your tax?
Your tax dollars.
Yeah.
Which means if it costs the city of New Orleans tens of thousands of dollars a year, it costs me tens of thousands of dollars a year exactly. as a New Orleans taxpayer.
Exactly.
And that is incredibly important that cities be able to manage their budgets on behalf of their local citizens, local residents, local taxpayers. And so it is very important that cities be able to do this. And the argument that this guy put up against bag bans was, you're taking away my freedom. Gives me heartburn that I have to bring my own bag to the grocery store.
Right.
Literally, these are the arguments that he was putting forward. I can't believe I have to tell my six-year-old daughter that the government said I had to bring right. my own bag to the grocery right. store. That is ridiculous, because when I was a six-year-old girl, my mother brought our own bag to the grocery store. One, because plastic bags were relatively new and she didn't really understand why we needed them.
Mm-hmm.
And two, because that just was common sense to her. And I grew up in Louisiana. Like, I'm not talking about California. I grew up the road in Baton Rouge, and we had those like mesh... The bags.
We don't have
like,
to go yeah. back particularly far anywhere in the world to think about that disposable vessels for carrying things never existed.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, all you have to do is go to Costco, go to Sam's Club, these like wholesale stores that people love, right? They don't give you a bag. They give you old boxes.
Yep.
They give you a container that is being reused to yep. bring your stuff home in.
Yeah, and it's not to make it super trite, but it's funny when you go to a particular place, and I know we're talking a lot about Louisiana here, so sorry mm-hmm. for our listeners, but it plays out elsewhere very much. Here, you will tell people, don't put this in a plastic bag, and then they look at you cross-eyed. Well, why would you not?
Why would you? Not only
it doesn't
that,
help me carry it any easier.
And the number of times, like, and this is actually ubiquitous everywhere. The number of times you walk into a liquor store and they tell you, "Oh, you can't take that out of here if it's not in a bag," y'all. That is not the law anywhere I know. It is not the law that you are required to put. At least it's not in either East Baton Rouge or Orleans Parish in yeah, Louisiana yeah. for you to put liquor or beer in a bag. It is not the law. And it is amazing to me how many people believe that is the law. And what I think is, it's also important, like when I try to go into restaurants or even like to a snowball stand to get a snowball in a reusable cup, they will tell me, oh, it's against the health code. I have read the Orleans Parish health code because I'm that kind of nerd. Mm-hmm. It is not against the health code for a snowball stand to take in my reusable cup or for a restaurant to put food in my to-go-ware.
Yeah.
And yep. it is amazing the amount of disinformation, the right. amount of misinformation that people know and tell other people and propagate. And it is incredible to me. Like, we could have these systems of reuse and people could be able to do this.
Yep.
And yet we have all these myths that we believe to be true.
You know, we can go off in many different directions, but just even talking about just the use of Go cups.
Oh, yeah.
Go cups can be brought into bars and refilled.
Yes. And not only that, Go cups could be reusable. Like, I know that's a crazy thing to say, right? Because it's a Go cup. Like, how could it be reusable? But there's actually this company that just launched in New York and San Francisco called Vessel Cup. And they have this system where they actually partner with a whole bunch of coffee shops that are in the same neighborhood or same area. And it's a stainless steel tumbler. And when you get a cup to go at these companies, at these coffee shops, you take the standardized cup that has all their logos on it. And you take your coffee to go. And then when you're done with it, you can bring it back to any of those coffee shops, or you can dump it in a collection container on the street. And then at the end of every day, somebody goes in and collects all those cups. They clean them centrally, and then they redistribute them mm-hmm. to all the partner coffee shops in this system.
It sounds like a deposito.
Doesn't it sound like a deposito? With a third-party company that's almost certainly locally owned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which means it's
right.
creating local jobs.
Right, right.
And especially if those jobs
branding opportunities, like
right.
you said, even.
It's yeah. a branding opportunity. If they pay a livable wage and they allow their workers to unionize, we're also looking at a social justice opportunity. I had to get yeah. my unionization in there somewhere.
Fair enough.
But I think if that's actually systems that we support here in New Orleans, we could have standardized Go cups. The city of New Orleans could potentially invest
brand
in this
it.
As
Absolutely.
A tourism aspect. And yeah, yep. you're going to get lost. You're yep. going to get some percentage of these things are going to get stolen. And that percentage is pretty small.
Well, you know what? And actually, Gene, it reminds me of this idea of when, Cole that we talked to earlier, now when you listeners are hearing this, you get 50 cents off your drink mm-hmm. when you bring it back in. That's not 100%, but that's putting stuff right back into the system.
Mm-hmm.
You're rinsing it, you're cleaning it, you're using it, you're getting 50 cents off. And as Cole even pointed out, I think this was off the air, so forgive me if it was or wasn't, that – that's actually still profitable for them on how their drinks work.
Totally.
Meaning 50%, and their drinks are reasonably priced, but 50 cents off a drink versus the cost of the Go Cup,
uh-huh.
when you're putting that back into the system,
mm-hmm.
he's like, okay, so it's 30 cents versus 20 as opposed to 50.
Right.
And that makes sense economically. And, you know, they're branded cups and they keep bringing them back in and people can continue to use them.
Totally. And if it's important that we actually keep looking at local city tax incentives, that we keep looking at systems that can actually, you know, take a lot of the wealth that has been unjustly distributed up to certain classes of people and can redistribute that to actually make sure that every working person's life is healthier, is better, has more access to refill, has more access to reuse. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I would love for us to see how we can talk about in the bar scene, not just in New Orleans, but I mean, we could do systems like this all over the world. If they're putting it in place in New York City, if they're putting it in place in San Francisco around coffee, again, coffee culture can be cocktail culture.
There's no different, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about vessels holding liquid.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think it's important that we think about how we can do that. And what power we might have to actually create and foster New Orleans as a bastion of sustainability, not just in the South, not just in the U.S., but as an example to the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are one of the most intense tourist destinations in the U.S., I think only second to like Disney World in Las Vegas, right? Like a lot of millions of people come through New Orleans every year. And if we could actually be an example of a community that is figuring out how to use our local culture that already exists, our local resources that already exist, and change behavior among locals and tourists, how can we actually tell a story of New Orleans' sustainability? I mean, that would be incredible. And not only that, but we have the context of doing that, you know, in the Gulf post Katrina, so in the context of land loss and land degradation and erosion from oil and gas. And if we could, in the bastion of oil and gas power, actually tell a story about how we be sustainable when it comes to petroleum derived products or any other single use, I mean, that's the vision that like I hear people talk about in New Orleans. And it's not just me, it's lots of people.
This is a really good point. And let's bring it on home here at this point, because we talked about, it's a great way to think about starting conversations and all the people that come and visit us here. And mm-hmm. we talked about plastic straws,
mm-hmm.
starting conversations.
Totally.
And this is that kind of idea, right? Where we can actually create a conversation where people that come here and see this here and integrate with it here. And we transmit information in bars and we transmit information in restaurants as we do here. And that's what we sell to tourists.
Totally.
That's what we sell to ourselves.
Exactly.
So this is a great way to actually consider a broader conversation. Do me a favor, Jean, before we, because we're going to close this out, tell people where we can connect with the campaign.
Absolutely. So you can find information about No Waste Louisiana at our website, which is nowastenola.org. You can also find us on Twitter at No Waste LA. And if you want information about Break Free from Plastic, which is the larger international movement we're part of, you can find that at breakfreefromplastic.org. And we're always happy to answer questions locally or internationally.
Awesome. Jane, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. This was so much fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week, friends. I do appreciate it. As always, quick programming note for you. Next week's show, we're going to be chatting with noted freelance writer and journalist Boyce Upholt. And Boyce recently relocated here to New Orleans, I guess about a year and a half ago, something like that. Has done a lot of compelling work in the world of food and drink and all kinds of other things. Writes for The Atlantic, writes for Medium, all kinds of other outlets. And he recently put out a piece on food halls. And it's a really interesting article that he wrote. A little bit of the good, the bad, and the ugly about food halls, something that we've seen happen or take off here in New Orleans in recent years, as well as in other parts of the country. So we're going to talk to Boyce a bit about that, but we're also going to talk to him a bit about his work, his background, all kinds of other things. Should be very interesting. Friends, this is our parting shot. I hope you found today's show interesting, compelling. Plastic straws, it's a problem and it's a thing. And really what it is, as we've noted on the show, it's plastic pollution is the problem. It's a significant issue, especially single-use plastics. We talked about how it's a health issue. We talked about the economic standpoint of all this or where that comes from, how it's just sort of insidious. There has been an explosion in recent years of single-use plastic. It's everywhere. Now, I think the best way to affect change is to make good individual choices. Certainly, there needs to be economic disincentives to stop using plastic, and we touched on that a little bit as well, or stop using as much plastic, I'll say. But that really, in my mind, to compel politicians, policymakers, so on and so forth, it starts with us making good individual choices and demanding that we use and consume less plastic. Starts with you, starts with us, starts with me. And look, I'll admit, oftentimes I go into a bar and I order a drink and I forget to say no straw. I do, and I'm trying to get better at it. That's why I'm going to go get one of those final straw things from our friend Emma there that we talked to recently, because if I know it's in my pocket, then I'm going to remember that it's in my pocket, and then I'm going to use it, and I'm going to remember not to ask for a plastic straw. And again, go to their website, The Final Straw or finalstraw.com, either one, and NOLA Drinks as a promo code will get you a discount. But we get back to the topic at hand here. Something we do talk about on the show from time to time, or we have, is we've talked about blind spots, and normally we've use that term to refer to thinking about people who are different than us, come from a different background, different situation. So maybe we're talking about sexual orientation. We're talking about different ethnicities, that sort of thing. And we don't consider the reality of other people's existences. We have blind spots. And then when we're confronted with those, it changes our reality. It changes our realization and hopefully changes our attitude and our actions. The idea is once you've sort of been shown the light, now you think about it and go, oh man, I had no idea. I don't want to be that person. So this is what I'm going to do about it. It's what you do with your blind spots when you hear about them that really, I think, defines us in so many ways. We've talked about that before. I think we can use that term as it relates to plastic in a sense. The ubiquity of plastic around us, its constant use, how it's everywhere, how it's so easily used, how it's so easily provided to us consistently, I think has maybe made us blind to it in a sense. So I'm using the term blind spot loosely, but I think it sort of applies, is that it's everywhere. And maybe we don't stop to think really about it. It's just so easy to get 20 plastic bags. You go to the grocery store and the checker bags, you buy 10 things and you get 5 plastic bags. They're everywhere. Now, certain places charge for plastic bags. We talked about that and the good, the bad, and the ugly with that. So don't want to go down that road exactly. But they are everywhere. They are constantly handed to us. It's all over the place. Now, we've noted that plastic straws aren't really the problem, or much of it is probably fair to say, a fraction of the problem of single-use plastic and plastic pollution. But as my mom used to always say, two wrongs don't make a right. I will hear a lot of people push back and say, well, plastic straws aren't the problem, it's this. Well, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do something about plastic straws too, right? So there is that point to be made. And we also need to note, as we talked about during the show, that there are people that have certain physical disabilities, and in order to actually have a drink of anything, they need to use a straw. Now, there are reusable straws and things in those situations, but we can't be so callous to say, just get rid of plastic straws entirely, or get rid of plastic entirely, or even probably get rid of single-use plastic stuff entirely. But the sheer volume of it, and in the past 15, 20 years, how it has exploded on the scene, everywhere in the world you see it, other than places that have banned it in certain circumstances, we need to greatly reduce our consumption or our use of single-use plastic. This is absolutely the truth. Now, as I said, straws are not the problem in and of themselves, but as we talked about on the show, I think they are emblematic of the problem, they are symptomatic of the problem, and they are constantly in your face. It creates an opportunity, especially as we interface with people, say in bars, when you say, please don't give me a straw, or a bar has gone to no straws or paper straws or things. And all these things are not perfect solutions. But as we interface in bars, and one of the things that we say on the show, this bars are places where we trade information, we exchange ideas, we interact with humans that maybe we wouldn't necessarily interact with in our day-to-day lives otherwise. Opportunity for different viewpoints, opportunity to create conversation. And this is why I think plastic straws are so important that we address that particular issue, because we can start the conversation. And in places like bars where we have these types of conversations, this can lead to positive change. That's why I think plastic straws are important. That issue is important to talk about. And that's why I wanted to do this particular show. So the next time you're out eating or drinking out, doing whatever you're doing, friends, remember, you know, ask for no straw, or even better yet, bring an alternative. It really is a good thing that just might start that conversation that we're talking about here, and it might lead to a behavioral change just one beverage at a time. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.